Welcome, everyone, to the X Factor Files podcast. I'm Daryl.
I'm Philip.
And we are back from our whirlwind trip to Colorado.
Yeah. It was great to see my friends out there. I hadn't seen them in years.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, we smell like sulfur now.
Yes. I have to run that laundry that I washed through again with just a shit ton of vinegar.
Yeah. I enjoyed the pools. You got heat rash.
Yeah. It was not an entirely enjoyable experience once I got overheated.
Yeah. Overall, yeah, mixed bag, but it was good. And the important thing was the quality time with our friends out there. Yes,
absolutely.
There were tears when we left.
We also hit up two comic stores. So I know we teased it last episode, but we were able to go to Mile High Comics because of a flight delay.
Yeah.
Which was a blessing in disguise.
Sort of.
We got half an hour there, and I feel we could spend like half a day there.
I know. They had a whole wall of Pride comics that was pretty amazing, and like Pride flags everywhere.
Yeah. But we were able to fill some holes in some runs. The DC Star Trek stuff is now complete, which is so cool to think about.
Yeah.
And you got some stuff for Son of Satan and D-Man.
Yeah, thing number 35, which I couldn't figure out why. Like, we never saw it in the wild, but they appear to be pretty rare.
Yeah. And
Hulk versus Hercules that I've been looking for forever.
Yeah. Did you get all? Oh, it's a one shot.
It is a one shot.
Yeah.
Oh, and then like some random Captain Americas.
Yep. And then we, on the way, we stopped at a comic store called
The Shop,
which is Comics and Tattoos
in Alamosa, Colorado.
Yeah. And I found a bunch of the Marvel romance comics from the 60s. So Millie the Model and Patsy and Hetty for $2 each. They were vastly underpriced.
Good for you.
Yeah. And we had a good laugh. Your friend Mira and I in the back seat just leafing through them. And she's like, why are they bitches about Patsy and Hetty?
Yeah.
Mostly Hetty.
Like very snarky to each other.
Yes. And then other things. So a Bill Mantlow Alpha Flight Omnibus was announced in the past week.
Yeah.
Which is super exciting. It's something I've been really just complaining about, the lack of Alpha Flight that's been reprinted, and they're doing it. It's the full Mantlow run, and they're branding it as Bill Mantlow and Jim Lee, and Jim Lee did like 10 issues. I think they're throwing his name on there to sell more.
Yeah, use the star power.
And they definitely like got themselves into a corner because they called the first Alpha Flight Omnibus Alpha Flight by John Byrne instead of just Alpha Flight Volume 1. So now they're attaching creator names, and then that means the following one. So, and it has to be two. So they actually dip into Hudnall's run with this upcoming omnibus, because Hudnall, for his first four issues, finished out the Dream Queen stuff that Mantlow had started.
Okay.
So the mapping is really weird. And mapping is a term of how they're slotting different issues within an omnibus, but then you can look wider volume wide.
Okay.
For Alpha Flight Volume 1. So the next one is probably going to be named like Alpha Flight by Fabian Nicieza. It has the Hudnall run, and then it'll include Fabian. And they're probably going to throw in the Crossing Line storyline from the Avengers to pad it out, because they have 60 issues left. Like, they can't cram 60 issues into an omnibus. So they're going to have to do like 30 issues and 30 issues and pad to make them thicker. So they'll probably throw in Avengers stuff and then maybe some Marvel Comics present stuff into volume 3 whenever they get to it. And volume 4 will be probably Alpha Flight by Simon Furman is what they'll probably call it. Painted
themselves into a corner.
They really did.
It's odd that they would do that and not just say like, use volume numbers or something.
Yeah. For some reason, they've been defaulting to creator names recently, and they did it with X-Men when they did X-Men by Claremont and Lee volume 2, and Claremont was around for like the first quarter of that omnibus, and then he wasn't on it. So yeah, it sort of messed up, and I feel sorry for the people who want to read it and they don't understand. Like, if you just went with numbers, it's easy for me as a new reader to be like, I start with volume 1, but when you start saying like Alpha Flight volume 2 by Mantlo and Lee, you're like, but where's volume one of Elf of Light by Mantlo and Lee? Like, you're just going to confuse people who want to read stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. Like, I would not have a sense of, hey, you have all these names. What's the correct order for them?
And not everyone has super in the know friends where we can go and be like, what the fuck does this mean?
Yeah.
Because we do. We're fortunate enough. But yeah. And my book update. All issue descriptions are written, and I spent time while we were traveling highlighting a bunch of stuff to throw in.
Which is impressive because we were playing, I'm going to California and I'm bringing something.
It's an alphabet game, and I got so confused, and eventually I'm like, I don't remember anything.
Oh.
I lose.
Oh. We also played the quiet game. That was interesting with an 8-year-old.
Didn't work. And I think that's it for now. So let's pick up with Elf of Light issue 30, which is entitled Enter Scramble from January 1986. Writer Bill Mantlo, pencils Mike Mignola, inks Jerry Talawak, coloring Bob Sharon, letterer is Jim Novak, and our editor is Carl Potts. So something interesting I ran across regarding Mantlo's taking over the series, and now he's starting to incorporate his own stuff and not just cleaning up Burn stuff, is to prepare, according to Burn, Mantlo bought the entire run of Alpha Flight as written by Burn, cut it up, and made a notebook for reference for like characters and things like that.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah. So we're going to see the fruits of that labor come about pretty soon with these three issues, because he's bringing stuff back that you thought was dead. So
har har. Yeah. I see what you did there.
As a newly recognized governmental entity, the team is getting a new headquarters outfitted. They're using Gilded Lily's mansion as their base of operations, and the government swooped in, claimed Tamarin Island and the house due to eminent domain, and restored the interior of the house to look exactly as it once did, with high-tech upgrades woven throughout. So the last time we saw this mansion, it had turned all to dust.
It's true.
The interior.
It was like a hollowed-out shell.
Yes. The government, being the evil Canadian government, has claimed it as its own, even though Walter owned it.
True.
He owned that whole island.
Was it in probate then or something?
I don't know. And as the military moves the equipment in, with some mishaps handled by the team when a large item is dropped, Heather wonders about the team she still has and who has departed.
Yeah, she sort of gives a panel to each character. And I got to say, the penciling by Mike Mignola is really detailed, especially with like the facade of the house in the background.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like it'd be easy to just be like some doors, some windows, but it's got like window shine on it and little brick rock details, mm-hmm. Little flowers in the edifices.
So
a lot of background detail.
Yes.
And Aurora got her scarf back.
Oh, good.
She even has an overcoat.
Madison transmutes some of the debris, and when the officials try to remove it, as it was once part of equipment they didn't approve of, Heather sticks up for the team and pushes back on Gary Cody, saying the team was promised no government interference in their operations.
It's true. She really laid down the law of, like, this is what you said, and we're holding you to it. Like, holding his feet to the fire, as it were.
Cody tells the military to stand down, and Alpha Flight goes about its business.
We get a little floor plan for sublevel 2, sublevel 1, first floor, second floor, third floor. These rooms do not have their own bathrooms and quarters. So that's odd.
Yeah. Yeah, they sort of dug out extra stuff at the bottom, and you can see sort of it even from the not top view, but just the regular view. They did a cutaway to show how deep it goes underground.
Yeah.
Because there's a hangar below the gazebo?
Yes.
I love these types of diagrams.
There's showers, gym and training room, and a pool. And then somehow a pool is above the workshop and laboratory, so hopefully nothing leaks.
Mm.
And let's see. Puck, Northstar, Aurora, and Heather might be sharing one bathroom, and Box and Madison Jeffries might share another.
Mm.
Let's see. Snowbird and Marina share a bathroom. Shaman and guest room, there might be one off the study, but yeah, there's only like two main bathrooms per floor.
That's fine.
I mean, maybe they're used to it.
Later that evening, Heather wanders the mansion and peeks in on several members of the team, but moves on without them knowing. However, she speaks up when she checks on Roger and Madison, who are working on the remains of Delphine Courtney to construct the former robotic body into a usable suit. She is upset that it may blow up when someone is wearing it, like Max, and leaves upset. She goes to the computer room and follows up on a mention Madison made about a brother by searching through AlphaNex, the Alpha Flight computer database. She finds a listing for Dr. Lionel Jeffries in a password-protected file Mac buried and jets off in the Omniship to find him in Montreal.
Yeah, Puck wakes up and is like, what is happening? And yeah, good for Heather for going off. She's like, I keyed all this in, like, why don't I know this? And it was something that Mac had tried to keep secret. And so now as leader, she's like, well, I need to know. If I am going to trust Madison Jeffries, I need to know why we have him and not his brother.
Hours later, Heather is shown into a padded room where Lionel is, not as a physician, but as a patient. He is almost entirely covered, and the attending doctor says he hasn't had human contact in years. Lionel lunges forward and touches his exposed forehead to Heather's outstretched hand, which feeds a mania within Lionel. An hour later, the rest of the team responds and are overrun by monsters. Northstar, in one of many quips this issue, rails against Heather's leadership. He's so angry about her being the leader.
He really is. And Puck calls him out. Our sarcastic speedster is too busy assuming a leadership role to notice that these creatures all wear scraps of hospital garb. So pointing out that they were the doctors, the patients.
And Puck is like, she's the team leader. She can do whatever she wants.
Yeah.
It's her prerogative to be able to jet off to look into something.
Yeah.
So as they battle through the hordes of misshapen creatures, Madison tells the rest of the team about his brother's background. He and his brother both volunteered to fight in the Vietnam War, and there, Lionel's power to transmute biological matter drove him mad as he tried to bring dead soldiers back to life.
Yeah, Madison had to contain him, so that's why he's covered up in a suit with a feeding tube, hopefully some sort of hygienic diaper system.
So Lionel is known by the codename Scramble.
And they find Heather, and she's got like lengthened arms. She's got spines coming out. Only her hair is like the thing that really makes her recognizable as Heather.
Puck remains with her, so tenderly speaking to her that the rest of the team speculates about his feelings for her once they leave to locate the still missing Lionel.
Aurora and Northstar run around. Aurora gets caught by some of the, I should say creatures, since it's no longer people. Northstar goes to defend her.
And she's sort of, Jean-Marie becomes dominant.
Yes.
As a result of this.
Because she's freaked out.
Yes.
Box gets lobbed across the room by like a combo person. There's like five or six bodies combined into one. Meanwhile, Puck continues to comfort Heather. And we finally get Madison finding his brother.
Yeah, in the morgue.
Yeah. So still stuck on trying to bring the dead back to life.
Yes. They battle, and eventually Madison grabs Lionel's head, and the clarity of Madison's mechanical thinking allows Lionel to rewire his brain to get rid of madness.
It's interesting. Like, you see Scramble grabbing Madison, and Madison starting to deform, but he maintains his grip on Lionel. Sort of like taking Lionel's hands off of him and pushing them onto Scramble's own head.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when we get all of these sparks and the synapse by synapse, Scramble puts his own brain back together using Madison's as a blueprint for how it should be. And we end up with like a steaming brotherly embrace.
So Lionel reverts everyone back to their former selves and he apologizes to Heather.
He goes in to touch her face, which is very invasive. Like, yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, I just turned you into like body horror.
Yeah.
Let me cup your cheek.
Yeah.
No.
Is this the substance?
I don't know. I haven't seen that.
Me neither. But I'm going to say this is the substance.
Yeah.
So the one being who was improved, unknown to the team, shambles out of the hospital unnoticed, and he's a large man reassembled from many different pieces.
Yeah, he there's like a little glowing thing of his hand being reattached to the rest of his arm as he shuffles off.
And then in the Northwest Territories, Michael Tuyungman bids goodbye to Snowbird and Doug Thompson, with whom he's been staying. He says he must strike out solo to find his purpose. Once he drives off, the two decide that they will follow him to make sure he stays safe.
Yes.
There is no letters page in this issue.
Oh. I mean, it was a good issue.
We're getting a new base.
It's a nice sort of like establishment of here we are and laying the groundwork for future parts, both with Madison and Jeffries getting more plot line, more development, Heather getting more development as leader and establishing herself in that role. And some little breadcrumbs of like, who is this body that has reattached itself together from all the different parts? And oh, there was another one, but I can't think of it right now. I thought it was great.
And it's Mantlo picking up on a little kernel of things, which is just Madison Jeffries,
Yeah.
and forming a story around that.
Right. Some of the dialogue is still a little bit like dated, like inappropriately dated, when talking about Box and Puck, and the way that they refer to each other. That's sort of how things were then, of what was acceptable versus what's acceptable now. Those two things are not the same.
All right, issue 31.
Yeah.
It's The Grateful Dead from February 1986. Writer Bill Mantlo, pencils Mike Mignola, Jerry Talawak on inks, Bob Sharon on coloring, Jim Novak, letterer, and our editors, Carl Potts. So, same lineup.
The Grateful Dead exclamation point.
Yes.
So we get that naked shambling body killing someone in an alleyway with just a touch. And who do we know who can do that? It is Ernest St. Eve.
Yes.
So
Our
he
favorite World War I veteran.
strips the dead body, puts it on, and then starts roaming. And he is thinking to himself, I needed to do that for clothes, but I can't kill all these people that I want to kill, because I can't draw attention to the people who are hunting me. I have to lie in wait, and then I'll get them. Ugh, evil laughter.
But then nearby.
It's Nemesis on top the
So
it doesn't name the building, but it's the statue of Jacques Cartier, the explorer from the 1700s. And Nemesis is like, Blade, oh Mother Night, it too has sensed the resurrection of our enemy. And it's supposed to glow brightly, but eventually it dims. And she's trying to figure it out, and instead it becomes, oh, he's underground. There's some interference with the blade. It's like a cell phone signal. We get the team saying goodbye to Lionel. He's like, I am so grateful for you giving back my sanity. I'll try to still be a doctor if Canada will let me, if I can get registered, which is very fast after recovering from years of insanity.
Yeah, and
Heather points it out even.
He's invited to join the team pending psychiatric evaluation as well.
Yeah, Heather's like, you're going to be checked out. So Lionel offers to help Puck when he sees Puck in pain, but Puck sort of waves him off. We get a nice.
So an ambulance screams up.
Yep, with the victim who is totally naked. Lionel tries to help, but he describes it as it's just an empty shell, like his soul is gone, the body's still warm, like the life essence has been drained from him.
And this is a great meeting point, apparently, outside the front of the hospital, because then a doctor comes out and he's like, hey, there's a body missing.
Well, at least he says, like, hey, you're Alpha Flight, right?
It was a criminal sliced into pieces. All those pieces are gone.
And Northstar sort of is very startled, grabs the doctor by the lapels of the coat and probably shakes him a little. And to get details, was that corpse in pieces before Scramble reassembled all the bodies in an attempt to restore the dead? And the doctor's like, yes, it was a criminal given over to our pathology department for study. It was Eves, or St. Eves, Ernest St. Eves, and Aurora and Northstar are both deadly earnest.
Puck also has a pang of pain, but Lionel realizes he doesn't have the power to help Eugene with his issue.
Yes. So We get a little interstitial here, following up on Snowbird and Shaman. And Shaman is a big blizzard. Snowbird can't follow anymore as an owl, so she becomes a Arctic cat, a lynx. Finds Doug Thompson, and Shaman finds a cabin.
He finds his old cabin, but it's been displaced from where it used to be.
He's like thousands of miles.
He's displaced. Like, this shouldn't be here.
And on the table is his grandfather's skull with garlands and flowers included, and all of Shaman's clothes fall away, as you do.
Yes, and the skull grows in size and lets out a power blast, and it transports Shaman somewhere.
At least it's a good moment for Shaman. Sort of like, this is a cabin where I learned how to use all this power. But now, like, I can't. With all the power that I had, I couldn't save my wife. I couldn't save my daughter. And his grandfather sort of explains, like, you can't blame yourself for circumstances beyond the power of any man or mystic to change. Your wife was ill, dying. No power on earth or beyond could have helped her. As for your daughter, she had become the binder, the preserver, talisman. She had passed beyond your ability to protect her. Indeed, she saved herself. So, also, we've been getting little flashback panels, also very well done in terms of the level of detail, and like, it's been helpful as a little reminder of what's happened in the past.
Yes.
So,
especially if people started picking this up recently.
Yeah, I guess that might be a thing when writers change. People are like, oh, maybe I'll look at this.
Like new Hulk readers.
Yeah.
Like, or they followed Mantlo from Hulk over here.
Yeah. So it's a nice moment for Shaman to be like, there's all this power and this responsibility. I don't know if I'm ready to pick that back up again. And his grandfather's spirit is like, I can only guide you back to the way of power. The choice of setting foot again on that path must be yours. And he goes for it. And there's a vortex. The skull and Shaman both disappear, again, leaving his clothes on the floor of this cabin.
Naked Shaman is somewhere.
Naked Shaman is someplace. So we get Northstar and Aurora giving some exposition as to who Deadly Earnest is. Aurora especially goes through, did Northstar or I never tell you of our encounter with Earnest? We had come to Montreal to visit. She gives the whole backstory of World War I vet, refused death, and has since become a crime lord, killing people with just a touch of his hand. And they met Nemesis. Northstar took Nemesis's mask off, and they were so aghast. But that haunted horror of a being whose humanity had been crushed by ages of untold anguish is how they left it.
So after that, the team splits up into ground and air teams to start searching.
Yes, Madison was just listening via comms the whole time. Like, what?
Like, it's a podcast and he's driving.
Yeah, like, what an experience to just be like, wait, what? Wait, what?
Is this where I drop the term true crime?
Maybe.
I mean, they were going over like a true crime situation in that exposition.
Wow, really going for more listeners. So Nemesis comes along and figures out that Deadly Earnest is underground and in the metro.
Yeah.
Deadly Earnest bumps into someone, and that someone's partner is like, hey, don't be such a dick, dude.
And then he touches them. Then he just murders them.
Yeah, he just murders the dude. And Nemesis shows up with Aurora and Northstar at the same time. Deadly Earnest has killed again. And Earnest is like, I've jinxed myself. I let my anger overcome my pledge of abstinence. It also appears that as my years multiply, so do my enemies. So it turns into a whole thing.
He touches all three of them.
Yeah, he touches Box.
Hurls him away.
And it's like Box's life essence throughout the circuits. Mm. And so that basically takes him out of the equation. He throws Box into Nemesis. And as the twins approach, he sort of like grabs them from behind and kills them too.
And then he wraps some fabric around his hands and takes Heather hostage.
Yes. It's like, I know how I need to get out of this. It's a hostage situation. That way these people can't follow me. And Nemesis stays to sort of maintain the victim and Northstar and Aurora and Box Because if they're still fresh, there's a chance that they can be revived. And she throws the sword over to Puck. And Puck follows Deadly Earnest and Heather along the tracks. We got a lot of internal monologuing by Puck.
Mm-hmm.
He is really struggling with his promise to Mac that he wasn't going to kill anyone ever again. That's when he was paroled and became part of Beta Flight.
It's Puck backstory.
It is Puck backstory, plus the pain. But he finds them and he cares too much for Heather. So he does a little bit of slicing and dicing, like across Ernest's back. He is very agile. And even though Deadly Ernest is also very agile for someone his side, Puck manages to slice off an arm, which really looks like a ham. Like,
yeah.
There's no blood. It's just like
pink
tissue and a bone, like a ham.
It cauterizes it, maybe.
Maybe. So the fight continues. Puck regains the sword, chops off Ernest's head, and Ernest's body is still after him. So he cuts off another hand and the head on the ground, saying, "Death comes for you, for your shining sword may slice me limb from limb, and yet I still will seek the plea sure of ending your accursed life." And Puck is like, "Yeah, I don't doubt it." But he sees a light in behind Deadly Ernest, which I guess if you're just a head on the ground, you don't quite have the range of vision.
True.
So he grabs Heather out of the way, and the train smashes into Ernest. Like, we just get a boot flying off. And that's the end of Ernest, but the sword has absorbed the life force of him and the life force of people that he had killed.
Mm-hmm.
So he brings the sword back to Nemesis. Nemesis heals the others, Passerby, Box, Aurora, and North Star. It takes her mask off, which we never see her face. It's always in shadow.
Yep.
It's very Gilded Lily.
Yeah, it's Gilded Lily coated.
Yes. And it turns out she was the daughter of Deadly Earnest. And after Deadly Earnest killed the mother unexpectedly, then this daughter sort of went on a trail of vengeance and became a scientist and a mystic. And that's how she created the sword. And eventually she just sort of disintegrates into dust now that her like
mission
avowed vengeance mission is complete, leaving the sword. Also, the sword has like a little wrist thing, like a controller for that the Switch keeps telling us to use the wristband.
Oh.
It's just like a Switch.
Within the letters page, Chris Buchanan of Westport, Indiana, and Lee Russell of Fitchburg, Massachusetts, where I used to live, both wrote in to ask about Marina. Editorial responded and said Mantlo is cooking up a story for her. Two other letters from Jason Hickman of St. John's, Newfoundland, and Matt Nemiak of Niles, Ohio, express a desire for more Puck content.
Oh.
Editorial used this opportunity to write about Mantlo's long-term planning and the continuity he structured, which will make Alpha Flight a highly in-demand book.
According That's to good. Because it really is, like, very self-contained and continuous, bringing back the characters like Deadly Earnest.
Mm. Issue 32 from March 1986.
Featuring the new Vindicator.
Writers Bill Mantlo, pencils are John Bogdanova, inks Jerry Telewick, coloring Bob Sharon, letterer Jim Novak, and editors Carl Potts. So the cover, like you said, is promoting a new Vindicator, and the first page is a large splash page with Heather walking into a room and Puck exclaiming, "No!"
Heather now has a suit. This is a payoff from Box and Madison Jeffries playing with the corpse of Delphine,
mm-hmm.
using those circuits to create a new battle suit.
Yeah. And she's ready to test it out, but he's having difficulties reconciling Heather's desire to be an active leader in the field for the team and his own desire to keep her safe from harm. It's a balancing act for him.
Because, as he says, like, Heather has no experience as a soldier or as a fighter. And she's like, "Yeah, I was just someone's wife, but now I'm a team leader." So she's like, "I want to learn." And he's like, "You don't know anything," which, right, that's why she's asking.
Yeah. And the training takes place in Alpha Flight's new danger room, which is remarkably similar to the X-Men version.
I mean, it does say it was modeled after it.
Yeah.
Except instead of levers and switches, Madison Jeffries just needs to wave a hand to get missiles to fire and gigantic robotic arms to come out.
Yeah, so it's he and Roger combining their powers.
Yeah, and you can tell, like, it's a new penciler. Judd is, does not look the same.
Yeah.
Heather generally looks this all right in the battle suit. I mean, her ponytail is the iconic red ponytail.
Yeah. So Heather does well until she gets distracted and hit upside the head with an obstacle. Her glasses fall off and shatter, with Puck unable to catch them in time.
But she does recognize that there are electromagnetic-seeking missiles that were fired after her. So she turns off the power of her suit. The missiles all miss, and Puck catches her because she no longer has the ability to fly.
Yeah. Puck is like, you were foolish to attempt that. And she counters that she just wants to learn how to fight in order to survive in a way that Mac did not.
Yes. A little bit of shade at her past husband.
And she explained, like, in the recent past, she's been used by Scramble in deadly earnest. Like, the past two issues, she's been controlled. And she doesn't like that, so that's why she's training.
Yeah, she's trying to regain her own agency.
So Madison and Roger come in, and Madison gives her a pair of protective glasses, which he modified from her prescription sunglasses.
Yes. So nigh unbreakable, which is nice because her other glasses are shattered.
Puck leaves the danger room and is overcome with unbearable pain. He crawls into the elevator and a strange black smoke emerges from him as he ruminates on how this may be for the best, as whatever is happening will revert him to a previous state. His inner monologue makes it clear that he's been battling something held within him and that he is letting it go. Yeah. It's sort of like when you had norovirus.
Oh.
And you're just crawling on the floor.
Oh, I mean, not wrong. But at least Puck doesn't need a bucket.
True.
So he is trapped there. Like, we get so much more detail in this, all this monologuing about where this pain is coming from, what's happening. Meanwhile, up on the roof, Northstar and Aurora are talking, and Aurora wants to sort of create a new beginning for them.
Yeah, and I think this is Matt Lowe being like, I really don't want to deal with them bickering for the past 15 issues or so.
But it works story-wise. Like,
yeah,
we were united in grief about Walter.
See? Gay.
Oh.
United in grief about Walter.
Yes. Why can't we just let the past die the way our beloved Walter died? It says our beloved. So Northstar sort of resists it.
He's sort of hung up on, like, can't touch.
We've been separated for so long.
Yeah.
And now we can't even use our powers together because of that experiment gone awry. Meanwhile, Heather comes out testing her flight.
She just blasts off and they're like, what the fuck was that?
Who was that? It must be Heather in a battle suit as powerful as the one worn by her husband. And Aurora wonders, why is she wearing it? Where is she going?
But they
and
don't.
He's like, to prove herself worthy of stepping into Guardian's shoes, no doubt. He's giving very Miss Piggy in a Muppet Christmas Carol, no doubt. Yes.
He harumps a little, but then the tower that houses the elevator shaft blasts open and a huge cloud of black smoke spills forth. So they don't have a whole lot of time.
No.
And they look down and they're like, what happened? And they see a newly tall Puck.
Aged as well.
Slumped down in the elevator car.
And the shadow monster is like, keep away. He is mine. No one will touch the keeper. I claim Giant Judd as he claimed me. Let all who seek to aid him fear the black blade of Razor. And they're like, Judd? Puck? Are you trying to tell me the oversized man lying in the elevator floor is Puck? So they sort of swirl around this shadowy evil Razor with his evil black sword. And Box is like, oh no, there's trouble. I need to go in. We get a nice little explanation of his launch tube that he has, direct from the lab up to the top. There's even a cutaway of the mansion with the different layers.
I love good mansion cutaway work.
And it's even got the gazebo there too, because the hangar is underneath the gazebo. So Box and Northstar both get sliced by this black blade of razor, and they both shrink.
Yeah, they shrink by about half a foot.
Yes, a very specific amount. And it's somehow related to the amount of their soul that has been chipped away
mm-hmm.
by this black blade, which Northstar has had his soul, like, between going into the realm of the great beasts and then being taken out again. The pocket universe of Shaman's Bag, being killed by Deadly Earnest and then being brought back to life. Like, his life force has been through the ringer.
So Puck is clawing his way up to the roof from the elevator, and Madison arrives at the same time, only to see Aurora holding her brother and contemplating her next move. She decides she needs to risk leaving her brother so her powers can recharge and she can do something to Razor.
Yes, because this spirit made of darkness seems to react to the light that she emanates. So,
and then she flies off to start fighting. And this is where we get Puck backstory.
Yes. I never noticed how thought that his outfit looked strange on him when he was shorter.
Mm.
But with a giant Puck, it's like a very odd
singlet.
Yeah. Like, you'd sometimes see in a wrestling ring and be like, but why?
Mm.
So we get his backstory.
So back in 1939, he is an adventurer.
Yep.
And he heard a tale of a mysterious sword in Baghdad.
And he wants it. Like, he was hired by a bunch of other people to steal it, but his plan was to steal it and make away with the money that had been fronted him.
So he found it, but accidentally released the spirit of Razor, who used the blade to cut him down. And it takes part of that life essence that it comes into contact with, which physically manifests itself in the shortening of its victims.
Yeah.
So Puck took a calculated risk and allowed himself to be sliced through the head with the sword, at which moment he decided to become a living vessel for the evil that was Razor.
Because the evil was corrupting a material that couldn't think for itself. Like the scimitar. Like, it was originally like a white glowing, more holy item. But it was just corrupted by the evil of Razor.
So it worked, and Razor was sucked into Puck's body.
And that's why he was always in pain.
Yeah, Razor has been trying to escape since the Wizard of Oz was in theaters.
Yes. So Aurora is holding Razor back with her light. Judd is trying to do something.
Northstar starts racing around him.
And so they create like a light of
vortex.
Plus the light throwing him off balance. And Madison tries to hold Puck back, but Puck is like, no, I need to do this. Razor's like, are you mad, Keeper? We are free of each other at last. And Puck is like, I can't take the responsibility of what evils you will do out in the world. You need the light of a soul to help contain you. So he again takes the scimitar, hits himself in the head with it, to let the light of his soul out to contain the darkness of Razor. And in he goes. And that's it. Puck is back to his diminutive size.
And Northstar and Box, those energies were sort of reversed.
Yeah, so they are back to their normal sizes and soul sizes. But into that mystically manifested wound, the screaming sorcerer is drawn back into imprisonment, where he will be contained so long as a tormented little man lives out his eldritch extended life. Because holding onto Razor made him, like, a little bit immortal.
Yeah. So, this is the Puck backstory. People have wanted Puck stuff for dozens of issues.
I would not have anticipated him being a vessel for an evil spirit as to, like, the source of the pain.
Mm, that is something John Byrne brought up in retrospect, and he did not like what Mantlo did, which it's Mantlo's book now, so Mantlo can do what he wants as long as it's editorially approved, right. And this was. But Byrne was basically like, no, he is always meant to have just a physical condition that's extremely painful.
Oh.
And that's it. He was supposed to just be a little person.
But this is a bit more interesting.
Yes.
It gives Puck more, or makes it more dynamic.
The more I read quotes from some creators, the more I dislike them.
Oh.
Or I just view them as like curmudgeonly. And John Byrne is one of them. because he's been vocal, not in the recent past, but in the late 90s into like the first couple decades of the 2000s, he would sporadically put out quotes and statements and things like that about different aspects of everything he's written. And he's
not just limited to what other people were doing with Alpha Flight.
Right. He hated his own run on Alpha Flight. We've covered that, where he just ran out of ideas. And there are some really great things he said, and but some really shitty things. And one of them is like, I hated what Manlo did.
No.
But we don't need that.
No.
So.
A team member with a deep, dark secret? We love that.
It's comic books.
Right.
So. I'm still on the fence about including that particular quote in the book. I don't know if it adds anything or not.
Maybe not.
Yeah, it's just John Byrne being John Byrne.
So
what do you think of these three issues? This is really Matt Lowe's run. Like, he's beginning it here in earnest, as I said earlier.
Har, har, har.
Now they get it. All the listeners get it. But what do you think?
I thought they were good. I really liked the penciling in number 30 with the house and everything. And in terms of like storytelling, I'm glad that Mantlo is picking up little bits and pieces and also advancing his own stuff. So he's doing a good job of like tying in familiar parts that previous readers would have picked up by, but also advancing his own stories.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really neat. And I appreciate that.
The good news is this was just a fill-in penciler.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. We get Sal Buscema on the next couple issues, at least.
Okay. But I wonder if they have, like, a relic storage or something.
Mm.
And they do mention this, like, am I, as Roger Box in a technological suit, I am not prepared to fight a mystic enemy.
Yeah.
Like, it's very different for him.
So you get that different combination. Yeah. On the team too, not only of the powers that they have, but the defenses.
Right. And it makes pretty clear that they don't have any sort of mystic magic defenses or offenses.
Mm-hmm.
Without Talisman, Shaman, or Snowbird.
Yeah.
And it really sort of came through here. Like, the team struggled until Puck came to the decision that, like, yes, I need to become the keeper once again.
Yeah.
So hopefully we get, in the next few issues, we find out what's happening with them and they come back to the house.
Mm.
I like that Marina was included in the floor plan, that she's still out there, but she still has a home on the team.
Yeah.
And I liked something else, but now I forgot what it was.
We get a little peek of Marina in the next issue.
Oh, good.
Just a little. It's a cameo.
Oh,
okay. But enough.
Didn't she go back with Namor?
She did.
I was trying to remember what happened to her, if it was that or if it was finding herself.
Mm.
So.
Yeah, and the next Alpha Flight episode, we get our favorite back in the book, Wolverine.
Oh, no.
But we also will step outside of the main continuity to read a Marvel Fanfare issue.
Is it the one with North Star on the cover?
Yes, and it's in your short box.
It is. And we came across it in, it was like the only Marvel Fanfare that they had at Mile High Comics in like the generic boxes that people can flip through.
Yeah, I didn't know. The one thing I learned is that you should go there prepared by searching their website, and then it's basically like a library desk.
Yeah.
A reference desk. And you're like, I would like these ones. And they ask you which grade.
Yep.
With the prices. And then they go back to this giant warehouse portion and retrieve it.
Yeah. Very like stacks like.
It's very at the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark, where they put the Ark of the Covenant in this government warehouse. Oh. And it's just humongous.
Well, it's a little bit like Warehouse 13.
Yeah.
Only instead of America's attic, it's America's short box.
Yes.
Or long box, considering how many boxes they had. Like,
yeah,
the amount of boxes I could see just in one aisle going back so far. And
I
wouldn't want to guess as to how many rows just like that they had.
I think that they had to use a lift to get the new Titans issues I wanted.
Oh.
Like, we heard mechanical noises.
Yeah.
Like, so.
Yeah,
it was. I still want to go back there at some point.
Yeah.
And spend like a whole day.
Yeah.
And a lot of money. save up for that. That's like the whole vacation fund. So our next episode, we have two issues of Alpha Flight and then one of Marvel Fanfare to look forward to. And then we will get into some more. It's a mishmash. But we do get a lot of Marina stuff. We're going to lead up to an Avengers issue eventually.
Oh.
Yeah. So. Yeah. It should be a whole lot of fun. So lots of good stuff coming up.
Nice.
So everyone, let us know if you liked this episode. Rate, review, subscribe, or something like that. And catch us here next time where we'll be doing some Starfleet Academy stuff next week.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right, everyone. Thanks for tuning in.
Be well.
Bye.